Welcome on to our continuing season previews. This is going to be the Memphis Grizzlies today, and we are joined by Chris Vernon from the Chris Vernon Show in Memphis on 92.9 FM ESPN Radio. And Chris, you also do Grizzlies pregame and postgame, is that right?
I do. Grizzlies Live on Fox Sports. They changed the name this year, Fox Sports Southeast.
All right, yeah, what did it used to be?
We were Fox Sports Tennessee, I believe.
Ah, all right. So you're moving up in the world then.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. We're regional. We're regional now.
So Chris's show is awesome. He actually used to have Chris Wallace on as like a regular guest when he was sort of GM emeritus for a while, right?
Yeah, I still do. He's been on every Wednesday for, I guess, what are we going on, like 8 years now? And even when he had the title of GM but didn't even go into the office, he was still a guest. Just became like NBA analyst of sorts, I suppose.
Yeah, that was one of your legendary shows, was when all this news about Dave Yeager maybe taking, I think it was when he was supposedly going to accept the Minnesota job and then didn't and came back, and you were just like, you know, and the GM was, or Jason Levien was like leaving, or so I forget exactly what the drama was, but you were just grilling poor Chris. I can't believe he decided to come back on the show after that.
No, he knows what he signs up for. He's good. His dad was a politician, and he's been on the show thick or thin. You got to remember, like, I know that because the Grizzlies matter, you know, in the NBA landscape now, that was a big deal. Things were 500 times worse than that when he's coming on every week and we're winning 23 games, you know, we're winning 20 something games, and the salary cap, like, they've done all this stuff where they're really spending, like, I don't, there was one season where they had, it was like they had like $35 million on the books or something like that. Like, they had like all these contracts that were like big contracts, and then they'd like attain the big contract and then like cut the guy. I can't remember. You'd have to go back to the season, but maybe like 05, 05, 05, 05, 05, 06. And they were just, they were overtly being crappy, and then just to try to get high draft picks. And they were like, there was a deal where you had to have like a minimum salary. But even the way they got to the minimum salary was kind of sketchy. So if you've got to come on every week and then, like, you know, the arena is a morgue, the team's horrible, they're obviously trying to lose, and you've got to answer questions and, like, do it with a straight face, that's like 100 times worse than what took place.
Yeah, well, and he came out of Boston, too, where it was the GM and certainly got assailed plenty by the media there, I'm sure that prepared
the media. Forget the media, the fans too. Like,
he
tells these stories where he's sitting in the arena and people would like be like walking by and they'd go, "Vinnie Baker, Vinnie Baker," right when they when they signed Vin Baker, and that was such a disaster. Or he's like in Boston and he's in traffic and people would like get, like they like, you know, do the, you know, the motion where you're like trying to tell somebody to roll down their window. And then they would roll down their window and they'd be like, "I just want to tell you, you suck." You know, like, that was right. Can you imagine that? That's your life there.
That's fantastic. You know, if you think, it's interesting that you refer back to those kind of nadir days, because 07, 08, that's when they traded Pau Gasol basically for what looked like nothing at the time. It ended up being Marc Gasol, which was huge. And they had Mike Conley, who, you know, probably people thought was going to be a nice pick, but didn't really do all that much his first couple of years. They traded for Zach Randolph, who was out of favor in other places. Rudy Gay, who they had drafted number 9, was okay, but there's no way that you could have predicted in 07, 08 that they were going to be able to have this sustained run of success that they did based with the talent that they had at the time.
No, absolutely not.
And really, they totally wasted the number 2 pick in that 09 draft as well, like which was supposed to be what was going to give you all the reward for the team. They picked Hashim Thabeet.
Oh, completely blew that, right? So they blew the draft picks. In fact, they have, I believe, now up until now, now they've got Jordan Adams. They've got Jarnell Stokes, who they drafted. They've got Jarrell Martin, who's already injured, but they did draft him this past year. I believe those are the only – so last year's draft picks, the one from this year, because even Andrew Harrison, who they took in the second round, he's going to play for the Iowa Energy. He's not on the roster.
Yeah.
And then Conley, okay? That's the only drafted players. The way they have gotten to where they are is absolutely absurd in the NBA landscape. I mean, the mode of operation for small market teams forever was, what do you have to do? You have to draft smartly. You have to hit, and you even have to hit on your later picks. So, and they did hit on a couple of laters, which turned into things like a Grievous Vasquez or a Quincy Pondexter or Darrell Arthur. They did pretty well later in the draft, but obviously none of those guys are still here either. But the mode of operation was you didn't have as much money as the other teams, and you certainly didn't have the media contract, so you got to draft like Oklahoma City drafted, like San Antonio drafted. And so they had these high draft picks, and none of them, like they've got one, Conley is the only drafted player outside of guys the past couple of years. And so doing it through trade and free agency, building literally the entire roster off of that is not something that would be necessarily advisable, but you got to give them credit for it.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. And that's one of the things that I wrote about in a piece that I did on sort of what the biggest questions are for each team. My question for the Grizzlies was, are they going to start getting anything out of these recent picks? Now, you made a good point, which escaped me at the time, is that they did get something for Arthur. They traded him for Kufos. He was a rotation guy the last couple of years. They had another couple of decent picks, but recently they need some young players in the pipeline. Are any of those guys, a Jordan Adams, Jarrell Martin obviously is hurt, Stokes, are those guys going to be able to contribute at all this year and going forward to keep this team relevant as the rest of the core ages?
Interestingly enough, I think the guy that may get the most minutes is not a guy that anybody knows, and it's JaMychal Green. He is what would be called an old young player because he is like 25. He's been out of Alabama for like 4 years, went undrafted, played overseas, played for one of the D-League teams, I believe the Spurs. Then got a 10-day contract from somebody, then got a 10-day contract from the Spurs, and then he was killing it in the D-League, and they really liked him, and they brought him on last year.
Yeah, he's got some bounce to him.
Yeah, they brought him on last year, and they really like him, and given the power forward situation, in the absence of going small, where they'd play a Jeff Green or a Matt Barnes or Vince Carter or whoever they might log some minutes at four, he'll get minutes. Jordan Adams, with they're hopeful about Jordan Adams. Obviously would like to get him on the court, but the hard part is you got in the West, you know, you're going to be challenged every night. And when you're Dave Yeager, you're going, okay, well, I'd like to get Jordan Adams on the court too, but where? You know, because Courtney Lee's going to play and Tony Allen's going to play and Matt Barnes is going to play and Jeff Green's going to play. And there's a bunch of guys, veteran guys, that are going to play. So whose minutes aren't there if I play Jordan Adams? The other guy that might actually get some minutes is Russ Smith, who had they attained last year at the trade deadline in the Quincy Pondexter deal and had an outstanding summer league, kind of proved himself. They picked up his contract, and he is a different kind of point guard, change of pace point guard, and given that Mike Conley has had his injuries the last couple of years, Beno Udre has had injuries the last couple of years, you may actually get some more Russ Smith minutes, but it is hard for young guys to get minutes on a veteran-laden team.
So I guess we got to talk about this briefly, this Matt Barnes thing. You know, I probably want to stick a little bit more to kind of the basketball impacts, but what's kind of the mood around there? I'm sure it's been a big topic for you guys over the last couple of days. Are they thinking that he is going to be suspended? Is this going to kind of diminish his standing within the team and maybe affect them on the court? What are your thoughts there?
Okay, Yeager addressed it this morning, or Barnes addressed it this morning, not in large part, but said, you know, me and Fisher were good friends. In fact, we were very good friends, and then kind of talked about the situation a little bit. And then Yeager, strangely, I thought, really put a cape on for him and said, this is not a distraction at all. I love Matt Barnes, and I support him 1,000%. And I was like, geez, man. You just really hate Derek Fisher, huh? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if he doesn't like the guy or not. Or maybe he knows more about it. But no, I think the expectation is that this goes away. If you're Derek Fisher, you don't want this staying in the news, right? You want this to go away, I would imagine. And I'd imagine that their love triangle or whatever they got going, like they probably want it to go away. So it is a news story now, a big news story. It appears it is not going to affect standing with the Grizzlies in the least. I don't think they're terribly concerned about the NBA stepping in and doing something about it, because it was, while it does involve two people that are involved in the NBA, it's their private lives, it's their personal lives. And so I don't know if the expectation is the NBA would deal with it any differently than another workplace, right? This kind of stuff does happen at workplaces. It is regrettable. I don't think anybody is sitting here going, you know, lauding Matt Barnes' actions in the least, but as more of the story came out, I do think people's opinions have changed. Everybody hopes that it's not true, that if he spat on her, they hope that that's not true. But when the, you know, first it was he drove 95 miles to beat up Derek Fisher, which that just on its face, the minute I saw that, I'm like, you have to be like a deranged lunatic to stay angry for 95 minutes. There's just no
way.
Well, question,
right? if you're driving 95 miles through LA traffic, that probably only just enhances.
So maybe so, but they said that he was already in LA, because that's like the crazy part of the story on the front end is that, you know, the image is, you know, like something out of like, as my friend Chris Harrington said, a Tarantino movie, right? Where a guy gets a phone call that he just gets on the highway and he's flying down the highway until he can go beat somebody up. Well, it appears as if he was in Los Angeles already. And then when it gets really dicey, and that's where we don't have enough information about it, which is Ramona Shelburne reported his 6-year-old son called him. And so now, anybody that's had kids, anybody that's been, people do crazy stuff over love, whether that's love of a loved one, or a child or whatever else. And you don't know the context of the phone call. You don't know what the tone of the phone call with the kid was, but it's not what you want. You don't want that in the news, to say the least, but it appears to me as if this may be something that just goes away. And a lot of that may be in part because of Derek Fisher being the head coach of the Knicks, and for him, this being in the news and the tabloids covering it all the time. And if you did press charges or whatever, it just makes it so much more messy. And I'd imagine they probably just want it to go away and hope the NBA doesn't do anything to them.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to comment, and probably we should shift to basketball, but not knowing what all the facts are, and maybe we never will, it's hard to say. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about this team. The number one question I always ask on these previews, because the way I like to kind of prognosticate the way teams are going to be, is to say how good were they last year, and then what is likely to change from last year to this year. So that's the question. How good was this team last year? They had a tough series against the Warriors. Mike Conley missed some time. Was it a case where if everything had gone right, this team could have won an NBA championship, or is your feeling more like, you know, this team ultimately was kind of second-round fodder and they weren't going to do any better than that?
Well, you clearly need to get some breaks. Everybody gets some breaks in order to achieve whatever they're going to achieve. They were probably a little bit better in the playoffs than what we necessarily would have thought. But again, they got some breaks too, given the injuries to Portland. Everybody knows that Portland was not as good a team in the, you know, as their seed, right? Are you as good as your seed? Once upon a time, the Grizzlies were an 8 seed, but were way better than the normal 8 seed, and that's when they knocked off the Spurs in the first round. And so that does happen. Oklahoma City would have been way better than an 8 seed. But last year, they played a lot more like the seed they ended up with in the second part of the season. First 50 games, they were an amazing team, and everything was humming. And then they, even after the Jeff Green trade, I believe they were 10-2 going into the All-Star break. And then after the All-Star break, they were just an incredibly mediocre basketball team. And so it was really, which do you believe in?
Why do you think they were so much worse in the second half?
Okay, so a couple of things. Mike Conley will tell you that they had so much success and that their record was so great at that point, because it was. I mean, it was right there at the very top of the league, only in a historic effort by Golden State made the Grizzlies not the big story at that point. And that they went to the All-Star break, came back, and did what unfortunately happens to some teams, which is think you can just go out there and win. And that just was not the case. They got the ego about them, and you take that where you didn't have to, they didn't have the focus, they didn't bring it every single night. This is what he would tell you. You don't have that focus where you bring it every single night, and then their schedule got horrific, where they played something, you could look it up, but it's something crazy. It's like 28 games in 36 days or something bananas. So you're not playing well,
yeah.
You're overconfident, and the schedule gets you. And they had a tough time with injuries. Tony Allen, losing him to the hamstring was a big problem. Losing Conley for some amount of time to a foot injury was a problem. And then they had some guys that just didn't play well. Courtney Lee, for one of the months, had the lowest PER in the entire NBA. He's your starting shooting guard. And the Jeff Green integrating into the team looked much worse post All-Star break than it did pre.
Yeah, and also I think maybe their early on record was deceptive, because their point differential was a lot worse than maybe that record would have indicated as well.
Yeah,
I mean,
but in fairness, yeah. They have been one of those teams, weirdly, I know that's a good indicator, but weirdly they have been one of those teams that their point differential has not been an indicator. They have outperformed record-wise their point differential every single season. So there might be something to that, and I don't know. I already referenced my buddy Chris Harrington. He wrote about this in a Grizzlies column recently, where he said, I don't know if there's, because you play close games at a slow pace, if that's common that happens, but it does seem to be commonplace where you look at their point differential and you would look at their expected win total, and that they have outperformed that virtually every year. And it would take somebody much, much smarter than I to figure out why.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't realized that that's been a consistent trend for them. I mean, the other thing that I look at, too, is, yeah, you can say, all right, they played Golden State pretty tough, but they also had, like, a complete cake first-round matchup, and then Conley ended up getting injured. If they hadn't played a team that was so decimated already in the Blazers, they could have easily lost in the first round as well.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. They had a very easy first-round opponent, but they disposed of them rather well. And then the second round, I think everybody will always do the what-if. And I don't know. I mean, and unfortunately, it's two seasons in a row that have ended in what-if. Now, in the end, because Golden State went and disposed of Houston and disposed of Cleveland, you go, all right, well, maybe that's, maybe you might have just lost anyway, but maybe you lose in seven, right? Maybe you lose. Maybe you win game six on your home court with Tony Allen and with Mike Conley, and then eventually the fate is that you're not beating that team again on their home court, because nobody was beating them on their home court. So maybe that's the end of it. But the year prior, they lost a game six on their home court, had to play a game seven in Oklahoma City, and Zach Randolph got suspended for the game. So one year, your elimination game, you were without Zach Randolph, and the other year, you had insanely hobbled Mike Conley, and you were without your starting shooting guard and Tony Allen. And so that's kind of the way both have ended. But again, given what Golden State ended up doing, I don't think that there is a tremendous amount of regret. And anybody sitting around going, God, the Grizzlies would have won the title if those guys didn't get injured. But maybe it would have played out a little differently.
Yeah, and I think, to me, the reason I spend so much time on this question of how good they were last year is that's, in some ways, kind of an existential question for this franchise is, how can they take that next step? Is there a next step that even needs to be taken? And the way I always think about them is in the playoffs these last few years is you're never going to have an easy series against this team. I mean, really the only one where they went out what you would say is a little meekly was that 2013 West Finals. But even then, those were some really close games. They maybe got a little unlucky to get swept in that series. But they're never going to sweep anybody else either. And they might win one series against a good team, but it's really hard to see them winning three series in the West against a good team because they don't really have that kind of dominant gear to them.
Well, I think what would be fair is to go back and look after game three of last year's Golden State Memphis Grizzlies series. And this is when everybody was healthy, peak of powers, whatever else. Or at least Conley had just come back and had the monster game two. Then they turned around and they won game three rather handily at home against the Warriors. Even though the Warriors made a charge there at the end and you thought, oh geez, maybe they're on to something. There's a lot of people talking about how the Grizzlies are just built. I mean, you could go back and read it all. The Grizzlies are built for this. This is the famous, right, when, people are referencing Phil Jackson's, how's it going or whatever he was saying, right? And it was like, okay, here's the poison pill for some of these Clippers, Houston, Golden State. If you can make them play you in the high 80s, in the low 90s, and the Grizzlies were able to dictate it in that fashion, then they're always going to be in this. And they were. And then, of course, Golden State got control of the series and ended up winning in six games. But it's interesting how opinions changed so much. And so are they a team that when they get to the playoffs, fully healthy, could drag people into the mud for three straight series? And, I mean, they did. They did for two, certainly. They did for two straight series. Could they do it for three straight series? They did it once before when they got to the West Finals. We'll have to see what this incarnation can do. But that's certainly how they will do it, is make people play half-court basketball and beat them doing that. And if people say there's a limit to that, there's a ceiling on that, then – I mean, what am I going to say? But
yeah.
I think the hope is that, you catch a couple breaks, get some good matchups, and you find some teams that are incredibly uncomfortable playing that style of basketball. And because it is so foreign to them and because it's more like playoff basketball is typically played, that you're the best at playing that way. And at that point, they hope that there is no ceiling.
Yeah, and the other thing to consider, too, is, all right, let's say that you conclude, yeah, it might be kind of unrealistic for us to emerge out of the West with this team. Well, winning 50 games every year and being a playoff team, that's not the end of the world. There are some NBA teams that operate with the idea that it's championship or bust, and we're going to go high-risk, high-reward strategies at all times. But, especially with the market that you guys are in, I mean, nobody – and how much the team is beloved by the city, there's no way that you can just kind of punt on this team and, try to hope that we're going to be good again in 5 years by tanking or something. I mean, you got to just, and they don't have the resources, really. These guys are veteran guys who cost a lot of money. There isn't really that much of another option for this team anyway.
No, and I think that, as you said, everybody loves the team. Ticket sales are better than ever, so nobody's got some type of fatigue, and it certainly doesn't feel like you're just stuck in the middle. It feels like you get to the playoffs every year, nobody ever wants to play you. When they get done playing you, they will all say, the Spurs will say, or Oklahoma City will say, or even Draymond Green said, right, the toughest series we played in is the Grizzlies. And so are you resigned to being that stepping stone in everybody's championship run? Or is one day, are you going to catch the breaks? Are you going to be totally healthy? I will tell you, there are those within the Grizzlies organization that think if Conley doesn't break his face and Tony doesn't go out with a hamstring injury, that Golden State series would have been different. I'm not telling you they're right. I'm telling you there are some that believe that. And there's certainly a segment of the fan base that believes that. And so I think they just hope, It is a bit frustrating because nationally it seems like a lot of people always focus on what the Grizzlies aren't. What they are is they are incredibly engaging. The fans love them. These guys are heroes in this town. Heroes. They worship this team. They love going to the games. They love the style of play and how it represents the city. And they're good every year. And so, yeah, there's only going to be one team that wins the title, but they are going to be wildly entertaining and fun to follow for the next 9 to 10 months out of your life, and then you just hope it ends well.
I equate somewhat the situation that they are in right now to maybe the Spurs around 2010. Now, obviously, they don't have the pedigree of having won a bunch of championships beforehand, but they have these guys who are kind of getting into their early 30s now or late 20s. You know, they have a younger point guard in Conley, you know, maybe analogous to Tony Parker around that time. But the way the Spurs were able to vault back into contention was that they drafted extremely well. They had these young guys. First it was George Hill, then they traded him for Kawhi Leonard. They were able to find Danny Green, a starting shooting guard, who's been a great player for them, totally off the scrap heap. And then they also were able to kind of get these guys to take discounts and then open up this cap space to get LaMarcus Aldridge this year. The problem for the Grizzlies is I don't really see the analogy of the young talent coming in to prop up these older guys at the moment.
No, and they got that Kawhi thing was the hit for them, right? I do think.
Yeah, and that's not to say that like every team should be able to do that. That's amazing to do that, you know?
Oh, but they do. If you don't think, listen, they, like many other teams around the league, they sit back and they looked at, and in fact, they did look at the Spurs, and what they said was, and so many of their acquisitions and things that they did were because they thought, okay, all right, let's look at what they've done and look what we've done. And they thought, they had a point guard and a center that were there. So those are your building blocks for sure in Tony Parker and Tim Duncan. So Mike Conley and Marc Gasol, that's our Parker and Duncan. And the expectation is after Marc Gasol signs this offseason, that Conley will re-sign long-term next season and that could take place. So now it's how do we build around that? And they obviously hit on the Kawhi. The Grizzlies have tried to trade up in the draft to try to hit a guy because it's hard to find a guy that's going to come in and really contribute when you're drafting whatever, 25 to 30 or 21, I think in the case of Jordan Adams, somewhere around that range, anywhere from 20 to 30, hard to find a guy that's going to become a quick starter on your team. But they wanted to lock in those two guys and then build around those two guys for the years to come and then try to get value. And they did catch a break because Zach Randolph, much like the Spurs guys did, he took a contract where he got front-loaded last year. And now he's on the books for $10 million, which is the Marc Gasol extension. And next year he's on the books for $10 million. And I think by any estimation, unless there's some kind of collapse that I don't foresee, he's going to outperform that $10 million contract. And then they did some bargain hunting where they got Matt Barnes for absolutely nothing, literally nothing. And they got Brandon Wright on what I think people consider to be one of the great discount deals of the summer. And so there
Did he take that just because he could come home to Tennessee? Was that kind of like the big motivation? Because I think he could have gotten like Kostakoupos money probably.
That's the massive motivation, yeah. That he wanted to be a Grizzly. You know, he's from Nashville, so it is close to home. First time to be close to home. I think guys view it maybe a little bit differently. He's got a 17-month-old girl now, right? He's settled down. He's married. He's got the daughter. Home is Nashville. So if you can't be closer to family, you'd love to be closer to family. As somebody with young kids, I know this well, right? You got a chance to be close to your family. It's awful nice to have that. And so I think that, I think he took a discount because of the situation. And maybe, they locked him in the house like DeAndre Jordan the night of for a very good reason, right? Because you look up and like Amir Johnson gets what, double what you got, you're like, maybe I should think about this some more. So they got him on a great deal, but I do, yes, to your point, it's because he's from Nashville.
So you talked about Brandon Wright, Matt Barnes. How are these guys going to fit in basketball-wise? How much do you see them playing? What kind of roles do you see them playing?
All right, I think you'd agree on this. Matt Barnes, no matter what anybody thinks about him, Matt Barnes, you could put him in any uniform in the NBA, and he'd just fit in. He's a plug and play. And that's actually been really good for the Grizzlies over the course of the past couple of years. They've had maybe their best success, or certainly close to their best success, with those type of players playing small forward. There was the Rudy Gay era, and when they had him in the playoffs, they got knocked out in the first round and had the greatest collapse in a game ever, where they blew a 27-point lead to the Clippers and lost in seven games on their home floor. So that was when Rudy was healthy. And then after that, they had Shane Battier. They had Battier first and then had Rudy. So they had Shane Battier, they had Tayshaun Prince, and Barnes is more like those guys than, I think people look and they go, all right, Matt Barnes is more like our Battier, he's more like our Tayshaun, and Jeff Green's more like our Rudy. And while Rudy was never a great fit with the other starters, neither is Jeff Green, but Matt Barnes, with this team, or frankly with any team, you can just throw him in. He is a willing role player. And I do think he'll log a lot of minutes for the Grizzlies, and I wouldn't be surprised if at some point during the season he becomes the starting small forward for the Grizzlies. The other one is Brandon Wright, and he will be the third big. There's no way around that. He's going to log a lot of minutes. They left a gap with Kosta Kupas, and frankly, they don't have anybody else. I mentioned Jermichael Green earlier. They've got Brandon Wright, and then they've got Jermichael Green. And everybody else is going to be that logs minutes as a big, maybe some sparing spot minutes as a third center for Jarnell Stokes, but probably not, depending on what the injury situation is. And then your other minutes that are go to a power forward will be small ball four, which will either be a Matt Barnes, a Jeff Green, or Vince Carter, more than likely. But I do think Barnes is going to play, and I think he'll be in a 9-man rotation for sure.
What's the story with Vince Carter? You think he's kind of done, or did he just have an injury-filled year last year and might be able to bounce back? I mean, obviously, whenever someone has an injury-filled year at, I think, 38 now for him, you have to wonder if they're ever going to get back. But what's the feeling around the team? Are they writing him off, or can he contribute this year?
I think they're very hopeful that he can contribute. Now, he told me last week that he did not want to complain last year, and he didn't want to be the guy, especially after he was the big free agent acquisition, complaining about how he felt. But he had surgery on his ankle last year where they put some metal bars in it, and he couldn't participate in training camp. He was on a bike. And then it's time for the season start. And he was just never right. I mean, you saw him. He looked like a man like in a potato sack race, you know, dragging a leg up and down the court. He could never run. And they were teaching him how to run again. They're trying to change his gait. And I was like, what in the world?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just watched like a few clips of their real training camp. And he still looks kind of stiff just moving around to me compared to how he used to.
Well, I mean, I even joked with him. I was like, who learns? It's like some Forrest Gump stuff or something. Like, who has to learn how to run again at 37? And he's like, tell me about it. here's the deal. If Vince Carter, I think last year he shot like 28% from three, okay? If he shoots in the high 30s from three, then he's a contributor. End of story.
Yeah.
You know, end of story. Can he go out there and still knock down 3-point shot? And I'll give him credit. He says that he feels better now than he did at any point last year, and it's not even close that he feels that much better. And he said, I would go back and watch the tapes and just be humiliated, and then I was getting down on myself, and then I was missing shots and all this kind of stuff. He says, I feel better now than I ever did last year. And the only reason I'm optimistic about that is because 2 years ago, Mike Miller told me that going into the season. And he was a great 3-point shooter, and he contributed to the Grizzlies in his season here. And then last year, Tayshaun Prince said that. like the year before, he was just hobbled the entire year. He had this terrible infection prior to the season. He never got right. You know, these guys always feel like if they sit out or if they're not going to be, that they're just going to fall out of favor or the rotation or whatever. So instead, and I wish it weren't so, but instead, they never tell anybody anything. They remain feeling terrible, and they go out there and they suck. And then they stay in your rotation, and then everybody goes, God, you suck. It happened last year with Courtney Lee. I told you one of the months, he had the worst PER in the whole NBA of guys that were getting regular minutes. The entire league, he was the worst player, according to that metric. Well, then, like, we're getting ready for the playoffs, and he's telling everybody that he had a broken hand. Well, like, you know, he just didn't want, you know what he didn't want to do? He didn't want to lose his starting spot.
Yeah.
And Vince Carter didn't want to not be playing basketball last year. That would have been the worst. So instead, he just went out there and was terrible. And so I'm hopeful that he's right about what he says and that he is actually way better and can contribute. But the truth is, contribution from Vince Carter is going to be, he has played great with Brandon Wright in their days in Dallas. Like, those numbers are through the roof. They seem to have a little something that they can do together. But it's honestly just going to come down to, can Vince Carter hit threes? And if Vince Carter can hit threes, doesn't matter if he just hobbles up and down the court from three-point line to three-point line. He's still smart enough to be an average team defender, and then he's either going to make three-point shots or not, because that's about what he is now.
So this is always kind of a question for me with them on the wing. Tony Allen, I think if you're going to your crunch time lineup, it's obviously Conley, Randolph, and Gasol, but who would be out there on the wing if you put yourself in Coach Yeager's shoes last 5 minutes of a playoff game? Who are those other two guys who are playing?
Okay, well, they pretty well do the same stuff, right? So, and maybe this is too, do you remember when we were having the discussion earlier about why their point differential is better than, you know, they've outperformed that record-wise?
Yeah.
I think part of it is crunch time. They've been a great crunch time team. And I think that's part of being playing together as long as they have and knowing exactly what they're doing in those moments, most of which include Mike Conley and Marc Gasol having the ball in their hands or a Zach Randolph, seal the guy down low. And that's about the extent of it. So I don't think it is incredibly important who the other two guys are. Usually it's Tony because he can stop the other perimeter, whoever the perimeter guy at crunch time is, whether it's Russell Westbrook or whether it's Damian Lillard or Kyrie Irving or James Harden or whoever, right? The guy on the other team, they're going to throw Tony on him at crunch time, and so you need that defensively. And sometimes they'll make the offense-defense switch. But so if we assume he's going to be in there when it matters most and crunch time, and then you're just deciding who's going to be your small forward when it matters most. And I think that will probably either be Barnes or Green, or in some cases it will go back to a lineup that they started for their torrid start last year, which is have Tony out there at small forward with Courtney Lee. That lineup was incredibly successful. It won a ton of games, probably has a ceiling on it when it gets to the playoffs with Courtney and Tony out there. But in terms of spacing the floor, because you have to, so it probably needs to be somebody that is honored outside the 3-point line that can at least space the floor a little bit so you can run that Conley Gasol stuff. But
yeah, I don't think Green and Allen really works together that well because he just hasn't shot well in a Grizzlies uniform.
Here's the weird thing. Honestly, Nate, and because I've gone through this over the course of the past couple of years, the Courtney Lee Jeff Green combo on the wings, for whatever reason, has been terrible. It's almost impossible in the last 6 years to find a lineup that includes Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, and Mike Conley that loses on average. That's a net negative. Like, they're generally, if you know, those three guys, you could put me and you out there with them, and we're probably playing even or winning. But for whatever reason, it's a net negative. It's just a bad combo with Courtney and Jeff. But what's weird is when I said that you can find, well, you can find these lineups where it's a, you know, if you have Conley and you have Tony, or I'm sorry, you have Conley, Mark, and Zach, that you can pretty much throw two guys with him and you're going to be winning. If you throw Conley, Tony, Zach, and Mark, you're never going to find a lineup that's a loser. Never. Never. It's just impossible. Those four guys, you can throw anybody else on the court with them, and you're going to be winning. You know, as much as people can bang on Tony's offense, it's been about him. When he's on the court, they win. But on average, almost all the time, every year.
So one of the big questions for me with this team is, can Conley and Gasol maintain their performance from last year? Because they both had really career years, at least offensively Gasol did. Maybe you could say he wasn't as good defensively as he was in that Defensive Player of the Year season. But do you think those guys can maintain their performance, or maybe even in the case of Conley, improve?
Yes. And I'll say this only because Mark came in a different shape than he had ever been in before, going into last season. And after seeing him here now in the preseason and just being around, I mean, he looked exactly the same. He did the whole change your diet completely, change your workout regimen. And so I think he's just a different human being. And it's interesting that you bring up the defense, because it might have hurt him a little bit defensively. Or maybe it is the exertion offensively that's a little bit different, because he clearly went from the second banana to the first banana last year. It was always Zach. Zach was your biggest offensive guy. He was the guy that was going to lead you in usage, et cetera, et cetera. And that changed last year. And so did his defense change a little bit because he lost a bunch of weight and he doesn't have the same amount of heft as prior? Or is it because he's counted on more to carry offense than he had ever been in the past? I'm not sure. But I would imagine that there is very little to no regression, and maybe he even gets better this year. He is squarely in the prime of his career, and it'll be a second year in this great shape. And the Conley thing is, I'll be honest with you, it's funny, we were talking about it earlier when you were saying 07, 08, and those teams or whatever else. I killed Mike Conley. I'm like every day. I cop to this. Now, he's one of my favorite players in the world and one of my favorite guys in the world now. I killed him. He wasn't good for 4 years, 5 years. And they were just sending him out there, game after game after game. And he wasn't any good. Now, I had to have the realization, like, you look up one day and he is really good, and it's like, all right, well, am I going to stand by my guns and keep telling people he's not good? Right? Because he's clearly gotten good. I've never seen another player like this. I know some people could turn to, like, Chauncey Billups or whoever, but I've never seen a player you looked up, and if you watched them in, say, year three or four, you thought they weren't any good and that it was never going to happen, and then you looked up in year six and they are going heads up with any point guard you want to name in the NBA. So far be it for me to ever bet against him. I thought the draft pick was bad. I thought them sticking with him was bad. I thought the second contract was dicey and that they were committing to it again. And he has proved me wrong every single step of the way to become the player he is. And he went into last season saying, I want to be a 40% three-point shooter, and he damn near is. And so, like, the idea that he's gotten better every year. Every year.
Yeah, he was a total non-shooter coming out of college. For him to be able to have this performance from three-point range is really very surprising for anyone who followed him back in that 07 draft.
And he dedicates himself every summer. You know, he just gained, I know that everybody reports, like, oh, he gained 20 pounds of muscle, or he gained 10 pounds of muscle, or whatever. Like, he's already lost four pounds of the muscle, because inevitably he's playing all these pickup games and running around all the time. But he legit gained 15 pounds in the off season. And he does it every single offseason. He's one of those guys that you can tell puts in massive amounts of work into what he's doing. And so if he improves, it'll just continue the streak of him being what people maybe don't expect him to be. Certainly, I became a believer about 3 years ago, and I'm never going to doubt the guy again.
Yeah, Gasol I worry about a little bit more, just with him being age 30. I mean, and his year last year, I mean, you do realize I buy what you say. You know, you always hear this, oh, he's in the best shape of his life, blah, blah, blah. But he just, his performance was so much better. I mean, he had a career high in PER by about 2 points, increased his usage, as you mentioned, up to almost 25%, and no real drop-off in efficiency from his career norms either. So other than those two guys, is there anyone else you're kind of looking at as a regression candidate from last year? I mean, I think, frankly, to me, most of the roster looks like it just when you consider the age and that guys generally kind of start to decline around age 27, 28.
Yeah, I would say one more point on Gasol, and this may be helpful towards him this year, is he didn't play for Spain, which was like the first time ever.
Yeah.
That he didn't play this off season, and I know that was tough for him not to play, but he skipped. He is always playing all summer. And so we'll see if that has a positive impact, right? But he actually just got off his feet for a while this summer. He clearly didn't get off his feet because he's still in great shape, but he wasn't playing basketball in a highly competitive environment throughout the summer. And that can go either way, right? When guys come back and they have a really good season, they say it's because they played USA basketball. Or if LeBron James needs a month off, they say, well, he shouldn't have played USA basketball, right? So I'm not sure, but that is one point. Oh, Zach is the candidate, to your question. Zach's a candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know, we're getting mid-30s now. And so we've gone from 2010 Zach. That's how long can you, I think last year he's one of a few players in NBA history that has averaged 15 points and 10 rebounds, or 15-9, whatever it is, for X consecutive amount of years. Like, that streak ends at some point, you'd think. I know he is a below-the-rim guy. He's not dependent on athleticism, but you see longer guys, more athletic guys, giving him more trouble the last couple of years than you did prior. And so, inevitably, when he is one of your best players and a guy that you do count on to get you buckets every single night, he would be the one. I mean, he'll be the one that everybody will be most keenly aware of, because if he does regress, the team will regress greatly. And so, how many more years you got? I mean, you look up and you say, geez, man, well, Tim Duncan's still awesome, and he's 40, and guys can play longer than they usually did. And you hope that's the case with somebody like Zebo, that he's still really good when he's 36 and 37. But right now, when you're mid-30s, the drop-off happens at some time. And so when does it happen? And if it does, that's a guy that his drop-off affects you greatly, because there's not the – maybe gone are the nights where – because he'll still give you a 30 and an 18 one night. And so do you still get those? And it's not a regular thing, but every once in a while, he just go out and get, like, have you a 30 and 17 night. And you're like, whoa, man, he's still Zach Randolph. Or do those go by the wayside? Because you need those. You've always needed those. You're not a team, as you pointed to point differential earlier. They don't play blowout games. Everything's a damn grind. Everything. So, seeing that he's a guy that gets 34 minutes a night and is one of your key cogs, his regression would have the greatest impact on the team, and so I think that's the one you keep your eye out for most.
In his favor, at least, is the fact that he probably offensively at least had one of his best seasons, you know, maybe taking a little bit of a step back, as you mentioned, with the usage, but he took more of his shots within 3 feet, up to 40% of his shots within 3 feet. Which is helpful. Shot a little bit better percentage, highest PER in 4 years. To me, this is another kind of one of those big questions for the Grizzlies, is Zach Randolph, you know, is obviously not great at defending on the perimeter, right? The Warriors kind of exploited him by going small with Harrison Barnes, making him guard Harrison Barnes. His pick and roll defense, probably not as bad as some people would think given his body type, but still not necessarily a strength for him. But the Grizzlies were always able to survive because he was such a monster with those duck-ins and on the offensive glass that you couldn't put, you know, you couldn't go small against them. You know, as he slows down, is that going to be an issue now to where those small guys could start winning those matchups by taking him outside, and he doesn't make it up on the other end offensively.
Absolutely. That would be the issue, right? The reason that your advantage is greater than their advantage, and the sum of its parts with him and Gasol is something that other teams, you make them match up to you rather than you freaking out and having to match up with them. But yeah, if he doesn't give it to you offensively, then what? I will say, you know, I went to their first preseason game the other night, and, you know, he only played, whatever, 15 minutes. But in those 15 minutes, it's rinse and repeat, man. It's the same thing. They give it to Zach, they give it to Zach Randolph. He bully balls Terrence Jones straight down to the block, and he turns around and hits a left-handed, you know, little bunny. I mean, I do wonder, like, he might be the kind of guy that he's just always going to be able to do that. It feels like he's going to be 60 and be able to just poke his ass out, throw his elbow, move you out of the way, and create enough space to hit his little lefty, you know, lefty layup from 3 feet out that he's been hitting for the last 15 years. And so, yeah, I think his regression would be the biggest. But again, I've only seen him once so far this year, but he looked like Zach Randolph to me. He doesn't look like a guy that's going to be falling off anytime soon or not being able to do what he does offensively. Hell, most of it all happens within 5 feet of the goal anyway. As long as he can still hit his little 15-footer from the wings, he's still going to be a really good offensive player.
All right, so give me your prediction, predicted record for the Memphis Grizzlies this year.
Okay, so last year they won 55, and they were atrocious in the second half of the season. As I said, they're around, like a 500 team, something like that. So they won 55. I would say that the West is clearly better than it was. Even the rat teams at the bottom are pretty dangerous. I'd say that there's seven teams for sure. Like, for sure. I think you'd probably agree. Everybody can agree on the seven, right? There's San Antonio and there's Golden State. There's Houston and there's the Clippers. So there's our four. And then you have Oklahoma City, the Grizzlies, and the Pelicans. Right?
Yeah, those would, barring some health calamity, which, you know, the odds are at least one of them will probably experience.
Okay, so
but if healthy, they're above for sure.
I think pretty much everybody's going to have those seven teams as playoff teams. And then they're going to argue about Utah, and they're going to argue that maybe Dallas, Utah. I don't know. You might find some
Phoenix, Sacramento.
Maybe big George Karl believers, right? That think Sacramento can be the surprise team or whatever. But generally, they're going to be one of those seven. So I would tell you this: I think they can be as low as seven and as high as three, dependent on, again, what happens in the league. We would have had this conversation last year, and there would have been no expectation that Oklahoma City is anything but a home court advantage team. But inevitably, or the fact that the Pacers were not going to be a playoff team last year, or many of the myriad of things that happened throughout the season. But I would say, assuming health for the Grizzlies, I'm saying they're healthy too, that you could be as low as seven and as high as three. I don't think... And most likely five or six.
Yeah, so you're thinking kind of...
Probably most likely.
Yeah. What are you thinking from, like, a win standpoint, like low 50s?
Yeah, I think they have to, you know, if they won, I'd say they could win the same amount as they could last year, which is 55 games. I think they could go 55 and 27, win the same amount. Things break right, you could be in the high 50s. Things break wrong, you could be in the high 40s, low 50s, but you're probably going to be between 50 and 60 wins, and you're going to be anywhere from 3 to 7, depending on the way everything plays out, because a lot of these teams are one injury away. You know, all it takes is Chris Paul having to miss 40 games or whatever, right? I mean, we've all been here. Once upon a time, Marc Gasol's injury almost totally destroyed the season a couple of years ago when he missed 30 games and the Grizzlies just had to stay afloat and then make a run and then get a crap seed and then played Oklahoma City in the first round. So I've seen it happen to the Grizzlies both ways, where they were the benefactor of other teams getting injured, and so there's a team that should have been there that wasn't. And then the other way, which is the Grizzlies were the one that would have absolutely been a top 4 or 5 seed, but instead lost, you know, their best player for 35 games, and they're scratching and clawing every night just to try to make the playoffs. But I'd say that's about right. I mean, all those teams are so good, and we'll see how much the Grizzlies improved from what they were last year. The one thing I'll say is there's a level of fan confidence, I think, that goes along with the Grizzlies, that if things aren't going very well, that they are not scared to make the move to try to tweak it to make it better. They did last year, and they shot 2 blanks, man. You know,
yeah.
The Vince Carter signing was awesome. It was perfect. They were tied up trying to get Chandler Parsons, and they swept in there and got Vince Carter, and we didn't know that he was, like, totally damaged goods. I didn't. I don't think many people did.
Yeah, I know they were really excited about that.
Yeah, and that was lauded as a perfect fit, and he had been so awesome for Dallas. He had hit that game winner against the Spurs, and it was like he's reinvented himself. He can still contribute. And so, but it was just a massive swing and a miss. And then they went into the trade deadline, and they're like, all right, now we're going to take our next shot because we know there's a ceiling if our small forward's Tayshaun. And they went and tried to get Jeff Green, and that was just a colossal bust, too. I mean, the chemistry never hit, and he was atrocious in the playoffs when it mattered most, especially when you needed him most, because Conley was not going to be Mike Conley anymore. Tony was out. You had guys that were banged up, and you needed somebody getting some buckets for you, and we all just kept waiting for the Jeff Green game that never happened. But at least, right, if you care about the Grizzlies, you know they'll take the shot. I mean, and you could kill them for missing on both of those, and certainly they've gotten criticized for missing on both of those, but I'd much rather at least have the confidence that they're going to try.
There are those in the analytics community who would say trading a first-round pick, protected as it was, for Jeff Green was a terrible idea because his advanced metrics and his raw on-off court data shows that he just, you know, despite his box score statistics, does not contribute to winning basketball. Obviously, with John Hollinger, I'm sure the Grizzlies were aware of that. You know, if you ask them, why make that trade in spite of these metrics, you know, what do you think their response would be?
Oh, I know what their response is. He doesn't have to be great. He has to be better than Tayshaun. That was it. He doesn't have to be great. He has to be better than Tayshaun. Like, there's a small window here, Nate, right? Like, they all think this is the run. They're veteran guys. There's going to come a time where they're going to have to reinvent themselves where, yeah, they've still got Conley and they've got Gasol, but Tony Allen's not there anymore, and Zach Randolph's not there anymore. So your core four becomes your core two guys, and now you're rebuilding around those. Or building around those on the fly. Because you're always going to be good if you've got those two guys. Honestly, when they've been healthy, those guys have won almost 70% of their games. It just if you have a healthy Mike Conley and a healthy Marc Gasol, you win. And you win a lot. So they'll reinvent themselves around those guys. But in terms of last year's, it was, okay, we're taking a shot at the title here. And so, sure, we'd love to have Luol Deng. You know, they wanted Luol Deng, couldn't get him. They wanted Danilo Gallinari, couldn't get him. They were looking for something, right? They wanted something, and it didn't have to be great. It had to be better than Tayshaun. And unfortunately, it might not have been. They might have been better with Tayshaun, honestly. They might have been better than with Tayshaun.
Were they surprised that he opted in for this year to that $9 million?
Yes. I think it was 50-50, but then 50-50.
Yeah,
you know,
certainly when they traded for him, they would have thought that he would not opt in, and then he had kind of, you know, a worse year than people expected, and then he decided to, I guess, maybe.
Well, and then you saw all the contracts that were handed out.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know. What do you think Jeff Green gets in an open market this past summer? He gets more He gets more than 9. I think it's fair to say somebody's going to get more.
I think of him is very comparable in my mind to Aaron Aflalo as a guy who had good box score statistics, although Aflalo really struggled even in that respect last year. But, you know, his on-off metrics were never that great. Was sort of has the tools to be a good defender, but you never really saw it from him if you closely looked at the impact. So, you know, I think it would have been interesting to see. Obviously, the wing market was a little overheated. I would guess that his agent probably sniffed around. I'm not sure that he would have gotten a new contract with more years and that same annual salary necessarily, just because I think it's sort of the way he played in the playoffs and with the Grizzlies kind of reminded everyone that maybe this guy just doesn't play winning basketball. But I wouldn't have shocked me if he'd gotten, you know, 4 years, $40 million from somebody. But I think his agent might have just thought, all right, I need to try and rebuild his value a little bit here. We've got the $9 million locked in, and you know, it just doesn't look good to your client if you opt out at $9 million and you don't already know that you can get a new contract from where you're starting at least that number.
Yeah, and usually if you're on a winning team and you're on the biggest stage and you can be a good component for that, there's nothing better for your prospective salary. I mean, how many times have we seen guys that are not that good, that were on awesome teams, that cashed in because they were on awesome teams, right? And I do think that's something to look forward to regarding the Grizzlies when you watch them. It will be a blessing and a curse, possibly, to have several guys in contract years that play. Barnes is going to be in a contract year. Conley's going to be in a contract year. Courtney's going to be in a contract year. Jeff's going to be in a contract year. And so there is the general consensus is usually you love having guys in contract years because they're going to get in the best shape of their lives. They're going to care more. They know that possibly, you know, tens to twenties to hundreds of millions of dollars are on the line, so you get the best. But also, given the logjam minutes-wise that the Grizzlies have, you do wonder how that will all play out, because you know all of them are going to be looking at that and going, yo, man, this is my contract year, and I don't need to be averaging, you know, 18 minutes and 6 points, right, this year. But who knows? You can average 18 points in 6 minutes and still get paid. So it seems. What that kid get in Portland? What's the kid that got
Al Farouq Aminu?
Yeah, right. So what does it matter what your numbers are?
Yeah, well, I mean, box score numbers too, and there's obviously a lot of advanced statistics that
My point, he made that because Carlisle started him in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I think that probably helped, certainly. Although they're asking him to play a little bit of a different role in Portland than he played, so I think that may not go as well for him as it did in the playoffs, kind of playing him more as like a 4 or a 5. All right, you got time for one more question here?
Yeah, well, let me ask you real quick. Do you have the Grizzlies 6 or 7?
Because
I know you're going to have them 6 or 7.
Yeah, I would say 6 because I don't trust New Orleans' health, especially now. You know, I think that their health record of just kind of nagging injuries, the type of stuff that you get when maybe, you know, your sports science staff isn't as good as some of the others. You know, the hamstring strain for Ajinka, pulled calf for Amir Ashik. He already has some back issues, like getting all that like lower body chain stuff is not going to be so good for him. Pondexter had like a pretty bad knee surgery that we didn't hear that much about at the time, but he's not going to be ready to start the year, and he kind of saved them.
I'm hoping they can be on par with Oklahoma City, you know, because I'm still skeptical of the Durant foot thing. You know, I don't really like, I think their supporting cast isn't as good as it normally is. Got the new coach in Billy Donovan, and a lot of basketball people tell me that Scott Brooks got beat up more than he should have, that he got them to defend every single night, despite their lack of offensive innovation. So I'm very curious about them because I think everybody's going to have Golden State, San Antonio, the Clippers, and the Rockets. Like, those are for sure. Everybody's going to have them ahead of the Grizzlies. 90% will have Oklahoma City in front of them. And so then it's just really a matter of, you know, you like the Grizzlies or the Pelicans, which you gave your reason, you know?
Yeah. I think that I am not so sanguine about the Grizzlies' chances this year just because of the age regression. Something that really, you know, I think that they could kind of get into like the high 40s maybe. And also they could just have some injuries as well. And any injury to Gasol or Conley you know, you can say that about any team, obviously. But the last question I wanted to ask you is, you mentioned Mike Conley's free agency. Obviously, the Gasol free agency was a total coup for the team. He didn't even look anywhere else. Maybe that contract's not going to be great for the fifth year when he's 35, but, you know, you can't worry about that now, frankly. What would it take for Mike Conley to maybe look elsewhere? It seems like the expectation is he'll stick around the way Gasol did. What could change that?
Nothing.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd say there's a 0% chance that Mike Conley plays in a different uniform. Just no way.
What if Gasol gets hurt or something and they win 45 games and miss the playoffs?
I'm telling you.
And he says, all right, it's just, you know, this team has kind of run its course. I want to win a championship. And, you know, I love it here, but I just don't think that this team can do it. We don't really have a way to improve. Is that just not how he thinks?
No. He would believe that him and Mark could do it. And once Mark signed that deal, he was in Mark's ear for a whole year. He ain't turning around and leaving now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's part of the deal. And they're not like, they're not basketball friends. Right? They're not like, hey, we're on the same team. Like, you know how you get the sense that, like, Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, like, they play together, but they ain't best buddies. You know?
Yeah.
But they really are best buddies. Like, that's
their... Huh. Okay.
Like, yeah, like they go to the, like their wives hang out and they go to the, they go out to eat together and they're like friends. And so Conley stayed on him, convincing him to come back. There's no way in hell Mike Conley's going somewhere. No way. In fact, I just talked to him about it last week. He was in studio with me and, you know, same thing he told me about Marc Gasol. Don't worry about that. Like the Grizzlies will pay him whatever they have to pay him in order to get him to stay. So that takes money out of it. And then he's not leaving Marc Gasol. No way. Absolutely no way. I mean, the same way that when Zach Randolph signed his deal, these guys are all close. Zach Randolph signed that deal for a reason, because he knew that there's this, he's got 3 years, there's a 3-year window here, right? So he took the front loaded one because they could pay him more last year. And then he took $10 million for this upcoming year, and he took $10 million for the next year. And he did that so that they could pay Mark one offseason, and they could pay Mike the next. And so that was the understanding with Zach. And then when Mark re-upped, that was the understanding with Mike, and then Michael re-upped. Those three guys will be on this team next year.
Wow. All right. That is a bold, unequivocal prediction. And they can offer him the extra fifth year, too, which is big for a guy who's going to be 28. And he's going to be starting at $25 million with his salary, and that'll probably, if he gets the maximum 7.5% annual raises, he'll be over $30 million by the end of that. And you can say that fifth year, even just from a pure monetary standpoint, is huge, because when he's 32, 33 years old, nobody's going to be offering him as a free agent a $30 million a year contract. So that he's one of those guys who's right in the age range where that fifth year is huge, but it sounds like even that's not the primary consideration.
No, it's another, yeah. And it's another reason why everybody loves them so much here, is because of this type of stuff, right? Zach wants to be a Grizzly. Mark wants to be a Grizzly. Mike wants to be a Grizzly. Like they want to be here. They love it here. They're super involved with the city and stuff that goes on. And in addition to that, they're friends. And with Conley, in his instance, it's really refreshing to hear him talk about him and Mark and the conversations they had before Gasol signed here, which is both of those guys think it would be incredibly special in this day and age in the sports climate. They're different guys, man.
Yeah.
They think it would be incredibly special to play their entire careers with one team. They both, like, have the highest amount of respect ever for the Spurs, and they do view themselves as the Grizzlies' version of Tony Parker and Tim Duncan. And that's how the Spurs did it. Once upon a time, they all could have gone somewhere else if they wanted to, but they didn't. They stuck around. Even when they went through a couple of those seasons before they reinvented themselves into what they've become now, they could have gone somewhere else. And so I believe wholeheartedly that Conley and Gasol want to be the Grizzlies, you know, Parker and Duncan, And if given, if the Grizzlies want them, they'll play their entire careers here.
Wow. All right. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because when I – that's probably a personal aspect that I didn't know enough about because I thought, you know, if it were me and I were Marc Gasol this last summer, I would have said, all right, give me the 2+1, right? Then I can re-up next year for way more money and, you know, still be protected at least with an extra year. I'm sorry, not 2+1, 1+1. So he could have been a free agent in 2016. And then see kind of how the franchise went. And if we're still a contender, I'll re-up. If not, you know, I'll go somewhere else and try to win. But they're lucky to have guys. And I guess, you know, despite all the turmoil that you could point to at times with the coaching and front office, they've managed to foster that kind of an atmosphere where those three guys want to stay.
Oh, and they believe in Para. They do. They believe in Para. Yeah, they can tell how much money he's putting into this. You know, they've upgraded their facilities even this offseason in another major way. He's doing all the sports science stuff. They went out to Santa Barbara for their training camp so that they could work out at this P3 training facility.
Yeah.
They've added a lot of coaches, a lot of strength guys, cryo chambers, locker room amenities, players' lounges, film rooms. Like, he's clearly putting a ton of money into it to make it a place that players want to be. And I would just say on the side, I would have been much more worried about Mark because Mark's a more volatile guy, and you never know if, you know, one of the moods hits him. Plus, you don't, I don't know his wife personally. So, but he does have a wife and he's got a young daughter. And so you're going to get in those conversations. Where does she want to be? Where do you want to raise the kid? Whatever else. And so,
is his wife Spanish or American?
She's Spanish.
Yeah.
But I would have been much more worried about Gasol and his. He didn't even take a friggin' meeting, mate. Not one. Like, he didn't even go. He didn't go anywhere. He was just staying. That's just the way it was.
Wait, so why was there that delay kind of in signing the contract? I never really heard a good explanation.
This is
all that happened.
Yeah, this is a hard one to explain, too, right? Okay. This is going to be impossible for anybody like you or I, or frankly anybody that's an American or normal for that matter to understand. He didn't think it was a big deal. He really like, and I know that sounds insane, but to him, it wasn't a big deal. He never considered that people would be fretting over it. He was like, you know, you can't sign until you can sign. And then, you know, like, I mean, like, he, like, went on vacation. Like, really, like, with his wife and his kid. He just, like, went on vacation.
Yeah.
And then he was out, and then he came back, and then it was like, you know, when it gets done, it's done, you know. But he didn't understand all the hullabaloo about it. He didn't understand why anybody cared all that much. Because to him, it was just like, you know, whatever. Like, I'm resigning. I told him I'm resigning. I'm resigning with the Grizzlies, and what does it matter when I sign it? Like, it's just, and you would think, like, with another guy, I would think, like, you know, he's dragging it on. He's trying to get attention. He wants people to court him. He wants people to tell him how much they love him. Like, he really just doesn't give a crap. And so I would tell you, like I said, I would have been more worried about him given the situation. I don't know what's going on with the wife and kid and whatever at the time. And he loves the way the Spurs play. So that was always our worry. I never thought he would go to New York or L.A. or anywhere else. I thought if there's ever a team that he would leave for, it would be San Antonio. And so when they got hot and heavy on Aldridge, it was like Celebration City here. But that was the only one I thought, because it's, again, not a lot of media attention, totally low-key, small market, and then he would get a chance to be the future of that team and play for Greg Popovich and play this style of basketball that he just absolutely worships. But Conley, like, no, he ain't. You can put that on record. No way.
All right. No, that's that will clearly be how I will be teasing this program, in fact. So,
oh God, they gotta they gotta listen to this crap for like an hour to get to that.
Well, that's how it works, right? You gotta lead them in. Thanks, man. This has been awesome. I've kept you for far too long already, and you do a lot of talking already, so I'm sure you're ready to go. Where can we find you on Twitter and the program? If people are out of market, how can they listen?
Yeah, all right. So I'm at Chris Vernon Show on Twitter. The show's on from 11 to 2 in Memphis on 92.9. And then for all of you league passers out there, flip on Grizzlies broadcast every once in a while. And hopefully you can catch me on that. And I want to say to you, man, I could not be more honored to be to be the Grizzlies guest on this. I listened to your podcast
all the time.
No, I love this podcast. I love it. Love this podcast. You have found yourself an incredible niche in between, you know. Listen, totally honest. I still download Bill Simmons. I download Zach Lowe's, and I download yours. And then some of, like, the fantasy stuff, you know, like, the Grantland, you know, the NFL one. I listen to Bill Barnwell and those guys. But you're certainly on the automatic download list on my iTunes. So it's an honor to be here.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. That's really good to say. And love your work as well. Looking forward to being on your show, you know, during the season, and hopefully as the playoffs come around too. Maybe we'll see y'all out here if Memphis plays the Warriors again. All right, so that'll do it. Thanks so much for Chris for coming on. And if y'all are going to follow me on Twitter, it's Nate Duncan NBA. If you want to support the show, the cap space code on DraftKings or SeatGeek is a great way to do that and use some good and fun products. And also my Facebook page, you can keep up with all these podcasts with my writing at si.com with the Cauldron as well. That's facebook.com, Nate Duncan NBA. And of course the iTunes ratings and comments is another great way to support the show. And we can keep it going, have some great guests on like Chris. So for him and myself, we will talk to y'all next time.